Blog Talk Radio.
Anxiety sets in, I'm starting to pace. My nerves unsettle, sweat drips my face. Hands tape, can't escape this decision I make. Heart racing, my faith says this is my fate. I just brace and I take in the face of adversity. Tasting this certainty, the brakes ain't hurting me. Gain on, a bomb of my pain stronger. Fame smarter, street smarter, train harder. Can't stop me, drop me, I'm not losing. I'm too fast, lightning even when I'm not moving. All heart, leave these cowards on cold. I'm hot, not to mention all the power I hold. Keep moving, keep training, headstrong. Be patient, meet them head to head. I don't care if it's the least safest. Not stop and have a promise to prove I'm a fighter. It's not an option to lose.
I don't think they're ready for me. I don't think they're ready for me.
Good afternoon, everyone. How is it going? Welcome, welcome. This is Ordinary Woman, Charlie Alejandro, on the Diamond in the Rough show. And today our show is coming to you at a special time. We are actually in the afternoon. We are at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and then we're going to rebroadcast later tonight, because tonight we are actually going to be at the re-premiere of the movie The Suitcase. It is a great movie that was made in the local area. David Garfield, who's going to be our guest on the show tonight, will tell us a little bit more about that, and we're very excited to have the opportunity to go out there and get a feel for the movie. I heard it's really good. I was unfortunately not able to go the first time when they had the original screening, but I'm really excited. This is the director's cut. I've heard it's going to be a little scarier, a little wilder, and I just really looking forward to it. Wishful Wednesday, don't forget. Today's Wishful Wednesday. I know in our area the weather's a little drizzly and all, but don't let that get to you. There's always everybody always uses that saying, you know, the silver lining behind the rain cloud or however the saying goes. But for me, it's more about making things grow. Dig deep, find out what you need to do or what you want to do, actually, to create a better way of life for yourself. And on days like this, when you're like, well, it's kind of cold, I really don't want to do much, I really don't want to go out, you don't have to. You can turn inward. Maybe it's time to grab that great book that you've been meaning to get to, or maybe it's a great time to write an old-fashioned letter with a pen and a piece of paper. Oh, my goodness, how antiquated is that? But I know for me that there's nothing cooler than getting an envelope in the mail addressed to you. But I have a friend of mine that does this. She sends letters out once in a while. She puts all these cool little stickers on it. And if you look at the stickers, there's actually meaning behind them. They're just not random stickers. She actually takes the time to put these stickers on that have meaning, that have something to do with what she wrote about in the letter. And it just makes my day. I've had letters that I'd saved from years ago. So maybe it's the time for you to do that. Make a phone call. Reach out to a friend you haven't been able to talk to in a while. Even email, chat, whatever it is that is going to make you reach out to somebody. Or maybe you can start to create something. I know that sometimes you run into someone, you haven't seen them in a while, you start talking. Next thing you know, great things are built. Because that's how it starts. A little idea, little tiny seed planted, and then that rain coming in, letting it grow, care, love, and everything else. And that's how it goes. So for Wishful Wednesday, find that little seed, plant it, let a little rain grow into it, let a little sunshine into it, a lot of love, and I'm sure you're going to create some amazing things. We had such an incredible show on Monday. Amanda McCarthy, amazing. Deborah Scatuto, I'm telling you, these women are amazing. We had Amanda's mom, Ellen, in the house. Just an incredible bunch of people. I'm definitely going to have them back. A great talent. So we're really excited about having them there. And the fact that you, our listeners, are actually tuning in, which is great, and we love that, and you're participating, sending emails and shows of love. I love that. Thank you so much for doing that and making me feel good, like I'm not talking to myself. So we're going to move on. Yes, now, David, I'm pretty excited. If you hold on. Hey, David, are you there?
I'm here. How you doing?
Hi, David. How are you? Welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I noticed that the name of your show is talking with women or ordinary women. So should I talk maybe in a higher pitched voice for the?
No. Yeah. We want the loving kind, rough David. No, it's funny. That's right. Actually my nickname, Ordinary Woman, because it's a kind of like a play on words that ordinary people really are not ordinary people. So
right.
That's kind
right.
of the joke. But we're actually the Diamond in the Rough show. I kind of like the idea of interviewing people that might think, well, I'm really not that big of a deal, but you guys really are. And I think it's time everybody else found out about it. So, yeah.
That's very cool. Sure. Thank you.
Yeah. So, David, yeah. I just want to get going. It's amazing. Now, I want to know, how did you get, what exactly do you do? How did you get started, and why are you so passionate about it?
Well, I got started in film at a very early age. I was born into an acting family, so I was making movies as a kid and using my brother as the star of the films. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, and he was 5 years younger than me, so he was like 10 years old, and he's gone on to be the best, one of the best jugglers in the world, if not the second. I think he's the second best to, as of today. His name is Jason
That's
Garfield.
Awesome.
You can see him at jasongarfield.com. He's broke world records as a juggler and stuff like that, 11 ball juggling and crazy stuff.
That's awesome.
Then I went on, and so I, you know, practiced and read lots of books. I'm self-taught with pretty much everything I do. I got into computers, and I wound up working for Microsoft and went on as a developer, making my own company, making nonviolent children's games. And video games are very closely, like, the industry is very similar because it's the entertainment industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I wound up producing a juggling, the World Juggling Federation for ESPN with my brother in 2004. I'm sorry, rather, 2005. And so I kind of got the bug again for producing, and especially camera work, and I always loved, you know, getting the unique angles and doing crazy things with the camera. And so in 2004 I started again making short films. I made a movie called Why I Hate the Last Day of School.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and it was like a I had heard from like directors Brian De Palma and a few others that if you direct people based off a story that happened to you, it's easier to direct. And since this is going to be my first short, I figured I'd do a story that happened to me. So it's about every day I rode the bus my senior year, and this guy, it was just public transportation. The biggest guy in school would sit there. He was this jock, and he'd just like harass me about how he's going to kind of kick my butt, but he'd never, you know, get around to it. And so until the last day. And so that was what the movie was about. I used all non-actors. I rented a school, had a $1 million insurance binder to use this school. We had the big fight scene in the hallway there and recreating everything. It was kind of scary because the guy we got, we had this kid that played me. He was this NYU actor from school of Tisch in New York. Would look just like me, a very wimpy, you know, kid that, you know, he portrayed me very well. And the guy that played the bully actually wound up being a punk instead of a jock. This guy had a mohawk and stuff. And they were friends, and they had gone to school, just by coincidence, had gone to school together and had been on stage and fought together on stage at the school they went to. And they had a little reunion there, and it was kind of neat to get to direct these guys. And so he was the only actor that – the lead was the only real actor, and everybody else were kind of just friends that were kids. And so it was really cool to get to direct these kids and get what I needed as far as – I played the teacher because I'm older now. Obviously, I couldn't play myself in high school. I mean, I like to think that I look young, but I couldn't pull that off.
I think you look pretty young,
well,
David.
Thank you. But not 18. I couldn't do it at 17 or 18 years old anymore. So, that pretty much took speed, and people really were interested in it. I had a TV show offer. I made this film, put it in some festivals, and started getting calls, and it was really kind of weird because, I mean, I just played this part in it, and that's the kind of parts that I was starting to get offers for. And so I wound up co-writing and helping produce a few different things, and it kind of just took off from there. I upgraded my equipment. I used my own production company is financed by my software company. So I raised my own funds for my own films, and we wound up making The Suitcase, which was originally a short film. I found some really nice waterfront property. This friend of ours had some really great real estate, and I always wanted to shoot on the water. I mean, if you know, cinematographer's dream is like these great locations, I went to the location with no story in mind at all. I had an idea about making a movie about a suitcase, but that wasn't I was originally going to make a short film called Days I Can't Remember. And the folks that are coming there tonight, well, and then when they watch the first segment, which did screen by itself as a short film at the Newport, was kind of like a Psycho movie night. It played with Psycho, and I don't want to give it away, but it's about a guy that sees this other guy move in next door to this abandoned house, and he's like this homeless guy. So he gets this broken down house inherited to him, and it's kind of like a Burbs. You know, it's a thriller, but it has the comedy along with it, you know.
Right, right.
You have that aspect. I like to dish out the horror or the suspense with levity. And it's also
so you like to scare the bejeebies out of people but make them laugh while they're being scared silly.
Right, right, sure.
awesome.
Yeah. And most people appreciate that, so.
Yeah, no, I know. So you got started in this. Now, my thing is you went from the short film that you talked about, Why I Hate the Last Day of School, and then you had this idea for the suitcase movie. And how hard was it for you to take that leap and to go into a full feature-length movie of that caliber?
Most people that are in the filmmaking business know how hard it is to make a feature. What an undertaking is. It's a huge ordeal. It's several jobs. I mean, we're talking just from writing a script to storyboarding it and then actually going into production and actually making what you need in the can. And then it took another year just for post because, you know, editing and sound mixing and scoring and everything. So it's about 3 or 4 different jobs that all need to be done as top quality, because that's what everybody expects. Is, you know, they don't want to waste people's time when they're being entertained by a movie. They just want to enjoy it. So
right.
It was like the idea that came. I read a book. I was reading a lot of books about directing and making films, and there was a guy who made a movie, a feature film, about a car. And what he did is he made short films. He made 4 short films, and he made it about this car. And he just had the family of the car change so that he could have 4 different stories. And I thought, there's a kind of a neat idea. You can make short films are cheaper. You can shoot them on weekends. You can fire your cast when you're done with them. You don't have to worry about people matching, you know, 6 months or a year
right.
later. And so I thought, well, I always had this idea for a suitcase movie anyway. And I thought, well, what a perfect marriage for the idea. So I'm going to take short films and make so I made the first segment as a short film of the suitcase to test it, and then if it worked and everybody loved it, which they did, they wanted to see more, they wanted to know, you know, why it did it and what was going to happen
mm-hmm.
next, so then I can make the next segment and do just that. So basically the film is it's 4 different stories. Well, the backstory counts as one of the stories. And so we go to these flashbacks, which was done in black and white noir. And my beautiful fiance, Susan Garabato, which everybody knows if they've worked with her, what a great lady
she is. Oh, gifted actress. Very gifted actress, absolutely.
Right. She was commended on her acting in it as well, and she did a phenomenal job. And we did she came up with the idea because when we screened it at Newport – second movie night, everybody came up to me, they loved it, they wanted to see more, and then they kept asking me, why is this suitcase evil? And I had an idea, but not really a good one. And I really wanted you to go there. I just thought, well, you know, it's an evil suitcase, you know, it's like the Evil Dead. We know there's a book and it makes things happen, but we didn't need to know why.
Exactly.
She had she just popped out with the, you know, like a salesman, you know, type idea. And I thought, oh, bing, you know, I hadn't played a part. I always cast myself out of the roles I write for myself. And
right.
This was a perfect idea. So it's, you know, it's a door-to-door salesman in the 60s. And he almost looks like the used car salesman kind of guy. And he had to come up with original content for why he's a psycho and what happens. And you have to see the movie to find out why it's really evil, but that at least gives you
right.
a head start. You worked on Surrogates with me, right? Didn't you?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
I was sitting there, and holding, and we had it with a big pad of paper and a pencil, and I'm sitting there writing the backstory to it. And if you watch the trailer at suitcasemovie.com, you see a quick clip at the end, and he has a pizza cutter. I'm like, so nobody's ever used what's original? You know, what's never been
right.
used? And if you think about it, how silly is a pizza cutter being a murder weapon? You know, he sells kitchenware to these, like, you know, like innocent women that all, you know, the housewife
mm-hmm.
at home. And
right.
They just let him in, and he's got cutlery. It's just, you know, it
oh,
makes
man,
you,
that's
it,
awesome.
It makes you laugh at the same time. You're still creeped out because the character, and he's definitely out of my niche as far as an actor. I mean, but I feel I did him justice, the salesman guy. And so, you know, it's just fun. People have pointed out that a pizza cutter isn't really a good murder weapon. I mean, you'd have to use it more than once to do anything with it.
I guess if you had a criminal mind, you would have prepared for it, so it would have been a lot sharper than normal, which people forget.
Right.
I mean, you're talking about this homicidal maniac that's thinking of devious way to kill people. And again, the thing that we forget, and I know from you when I saw the trailer, it sent shivers up my spine because I remember how innocent those times were. I wasn't around in the 50s, but I remember my mom telling me that that was the norm. You would have the door open, and you would have these salesmen literally walk into your living room, and the thought of saying no never occurred to them. They just like, yeah, go ahead, do whatever. She's like, sometimes her mom would actually have them for lunch, just like random people that no one knew. So the innocence and the fact that it would be so easy for someone with a diabolical mind to gain access to these naive women, because they really were. They were like, wow.
Right.
So innocent and so naive in their way. So, yeah, for me, I was like, oh, man, scary.
Yeah,
it comes to mind,
a vacuum salesman that comes in and dumps a bunch of junk on your floor and shows you or the Tupperware or whatever it is that they were selling. You know, knives, though, I do know, like, even all the way up into the 80s, people were, you know, door-to-door salesmen selling these, you know, like, I don't know if they were Ginsu, but they were definitely still doing that.
Oh, yeah, they still do. A friend of mine that just moved here from the Midwest, she says that's still very common. The knife salesman and even vacuum cleaner salesmen, they're still out there. And I'm like, and the Avon people.
Right.
But it was just funny to me that the way you put it in the story, it does make sense. And that alone sets it up for our age now, because we know we're not as innocent. We know what's out there. So for us to see the innocence of, sure, come on in. Lock the door. No.
And you always have the people in the eye saying, don't do it, don't do it, don't let them in. You know, it was so funny at the premiere hearing, you know, the reactions and people really getting it, you know. I love it when it shows what, you know. Filmmaking is really just about, I don't like force feeding a movie, and this movie is really a movie watcher's movie. It's kind of like, it doesn't leave you in the dark. You're not totally confused, but it doesn't insult your intelligence. It doesn't say, oh, well, we know this is going to happen later because of this type of thing. So that was really the angle I was going for with being original. I mean, it was my first feature, and then putting myself in it was just an honor and reward to get to do something like that, because I mean the other people that were in the film were all commended for their performance, and they worked very hard. I mean, I worked with the first segment guys. We were in the rehearsals for a good month or two before they shot it, and you know, they're SAG actors, and it was a neat experience to get to do the whole thing, and I got to use my daughter in the second segment in the runaway. And that's the girl you see in the trailer, and it's a fun experience, and I think that people are really going to enjoy. You know, it has a Pulp Fiction-esque kind of feel to it, where you go from one part of the story, you go back to the backstory, and you see, oh, okay, then, all right, that's why this, you know, is going on and stuff like that. So, you know, it kind of gives you little breadcrumbs.
Yeah, but the thing too is that for me, because I know a lot of you guys, it's just, well, number one, it boggles my mind that you're still local, because I mean, the talent is phenomenal, you know, and I'm not getting paid to say this. I mean, I'm not the type of person that's going to say something if I don't feel it. And the thing for me when I...
10 bucks later.
Yeah, you're giving my 10 bucks later. And the funny thing for me is to watch you and your fiancé's chemistry on screen. It's just like, whoa. And the other thing that gets me is that you come across as the all-American choir boy, you know, because of your looks and stuff, and then to have you stretching your acting to what you're actually doing in this film.
Right.
You're underestimating the way you're saying it, that, oh, well, you know, I did it justice. I think you did it a little, because you have to sell that part. And the thing is, when you have someone like you, because you're a nice person, to stretch to do that and to have it believable in the screen, where people are actually sitting there going, oh, no, lock the door, don't let him in, as opposed to, sure, let him in kind of thing, because he's a cool guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, David, you really killed it. I mean, it was amazing to watch you up there, to see what you did with it. And even for me, being an actor was the little nuances.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes I notice some actors, while they're still good, they have a tendency to really over-exaggerate certain movements in horror movies.
Sure.
Yeah, and in the suspense movies, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
Where you didn't do that. It was little
less
tiny
is
nuances.
A lot more.
It
yeah.
was, and there was
the
a couple of
times. The screen
is
really unforgiving when it comes to that. It's like, it's so close. I mean, the audience is like, when especially with a close-up, it's like you're really kind of putting yourself like if I was right in front of you or the character's right in your face. So the smallest details are often better, like let them read your mind or, you know, they can feel what you're thinking kind of thing just from your expressions and stuff like that. Yeah, that I appreciate that. That's a very nice compliment. Thank you.
No, I'm telling you. Yeah. And it was funny, too, because we were at another premiere back in August, and my husband came with me to that, and they did have the trailer for your movie. And
mm-hmm.
I thought it was pretty funny because my poor husband, I'm dragging him to all these premieres. Some are good, some are not.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the type that he's sitting there going, oh, man, what is she getting me into? But for him to turn to me and say, oh, I got to see that movie.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
It was cool because he hadn't done that to this point. He was more like, okay, please tell me I don't have to go to whatever they're showing up there as trailers because, you know, I'm just being polite
right.
here to, for you.
Yeah.
But this one, he looked at me and said, I have got to see this movie. And even to the point that, you know, he was supposed to come to the premiere with me tonight, and they told him he had to work, and he was, like, so upset. He's like, I cannot believe I can't see. And it blew my mind because he's not like that. He's not the type to be totally upset about anything like that.
Right.
So now the other thing, David, you had, okay, you did the acting,
mm-hmm.
which, again, we know it takes a lot. Now, you did the directing as well?
Right.
And
yeah.
So now how do you, and this is something that I've always been curious about, how do you maintain your character and then be able to go into the director's hat and then go back into the acting?
Well, that's why the part that I played, though a substantial plot-driving part, is was a lot smaller. Like, when it came to the directing, I mean, I don't know if you know Rod Weber. He's a very talented
mm-hmm.
director
yes.
and filmmaker. And I recently worked with him, and he's kind of doing kind of an ad-lib improv. Incredible work to watch him do it. You know, he knows the character, and the people know their characters, and they just improv. But it was very difficult for him directing, and he's the lead character, because an actor, when they're on a set, really needs to just focus on their role. They really need
right.
to... That, you know, a lot of method actors stay in character. They, you know what I mean? They actually talk like the person that they're portraying. So for me to snap out of it, that wasn't really an option. So the scenes that we did, I'd do a setup, and I would always refer to the character, because you got to love your characters that you play. And
mm-hmm.
I would refer to him as in third person because, I mean, he's a very despicable person. He's got this, you know, underlying illness to want to hurt people. And it wasn't easy, but to direct myself, I mean, I had my fiance, I had other people helping me when it came to critiquing myself, because I always ask for input on my sets no matter what I'm shooting. And
right.
so that helped a lot. And but as far as directing in general, I mean, I've been studying directing also since I was 13, but reading a lot of books and learning a lot of techniques that I don't like mm-hmm. to ask somebody, can you do it this way, or would you give me a line read or something? I'd rather tell somebody, influence the other character in such a way, is the trick that I've learned, which
mm-hmm.
if you're interested in directing film, if you have an actress who's not, or an actor or an actress that's not pulling off what you want, if you tell them to influence whoever else is in the scene in some way, they won't take it as criticism. They will add something to the character. You're not even be specific about how you want them to play
right.
it. They will add a layer to their character and enhance it. So that's
excellent.
That,
now, Rob Weber, he's another one I'm looking forward
who's
to
who's in
having
the movie,
him
too.
On
he's
show.
In the suitcase, too, briefly. But
oh,
he
yeah.
just the third part.
Yes.
Co-direct.
Excellent. Now, see, the thing is, David, that's amazing. Now, let me ask you real quick. When you are acting, do you stay in character or do you come in and out? And how do
when
you
the
stay
camera's
focused
rolling,
between?
I'm in character.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always in character. I'm really comfortable in front of the camera, especially if I'm playing a character. It's almost like... It's like Halloween in a way. You get to be somebody you're not, and Well, it was funny. When we shot, a lot of people listening might know Rosemary Mahoney. She's a local actress here, but she's been in quite a few commercials and making a nice living for herself as an actress. And she was adorable and just the biggest team player when we worked with her. I felt kind of – I went over there with my fiancé. We shot the part. And I felt almost like I mean, a person could go over to somebody's house in guise of making a movie and actually murder somebody.
Absolutely.
You know, because that's what that's what's happening in the movie. So having that in my mind of like, you know, what would this person think? And this really very trusting person that's letting us come in with a camera and equipment. And, you know, we could just be psychos. So
I'm telling you, David, it is. Now, real quick, for our listeners, if you have any questions for David, the number is 347-989-1473, or you can log on to blogtalkradio.com/ordinarywoman. Woman is spelled W-M-N, and you can go right into our chat room, or you can actually call in directly from the website. Real quick, my co-host is in that building. Hey, Mountain Man, are you there?
Yes, I am. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. Hey, guest 1726, welcome, welcome. Mountain Man's been slacking. No, I'm only kidding. Mountain Man had an appointment to go to. Thank you so much for joining us halfway. We have David Garfield on. He is an amazing person. He is the CEO of Wonder Dog Entertainment and Films, among a bunch of other things. But the main thing we're talking about right now is he's having the re-premiere of his original movie, The Suitcase, tonight. And I am just excited and cannot wait to see it. And you know, going back to what you were saying, David, about the fact that, you know, the trustingness, that's why for me, having a background in law enforcement years ago, I swear to goodness, as soon as I saw that, that's what scared me the most. I mean, so I was already scared before it started rolling. I'm like, oh, my God, people, lock the door. What is wrong with you? Don't let them in kind of thing. So, yeah, I can understand. And I almost guarantee you tonight at the screening, like you mentioned earlier, there's going to be people going, no, don't go in there. Don't go in there.
Right. Well, there's people
that
are afraid to see it. There's been people that have told it. And some people, because they know me, they came and saw it, and they were just as scared, and they were like, I'm a fan of yours, but that was a scary movie. Can you make movies that aren't so frightening? I want to plug the website, suitcasemovie.com. You can see that we are showing an award-winning short film. It's a 20-minute film called The Unknown that won at the Boston International Film Festival this last spring, and it's an incredible movie as well. It's a comedy about a guy getting into acting. What's that?
Who was the ones that did that movie?
That was, Jay Salvo is a guy. He's a very talented director of photography. I'd love to use in my future projects. I got to meet him. And Chris Cianchina, which I've been on a couple talk shows with Chris. Very talented actor, really pulls off this role of an actor trying to make it in the business. Very funny film. I mean, everybody that's there tonight will definitely relate to this film, and you can see why he won an award. He wrote it. It's just kind of a real story based on what he's like. And so we have that. We also have another short film with another talented actor named Richard Italiano, a short 10-minute movie we're going to show just while people are coming in, called Wide Awake. And it was a student film he helped make, and he really got in there and helped this guy get what he was looking for. It's very noirish as well. So kind of trying to keep the theme going. That's
awesome.
Kind of just a thriller. It's a little 10-minute thriller called Wide Awake. So you get to see a couple short films, some really nice trailers of some things that are coming out from the local independent filmmakers. Somebody asked me, do I get paid to show people's trailers and stuff like that? And I'm like, when I have a venue or an event like this, I'm like, no. I really just want to help support the local filmmakers and some of these projects that are coming out. You can see the bar being raised every year, and you know, it's easy to grab a camera and make a movie, or it's not easy, but it's the competitiveness in it is you really got to be creative. And when people come and see these movies, a lot of times they'll tell me, it's like, I'm inspired. I'm gonna make more stuff, and keep honing my craft. So. You know,
now, one question, David, not to cut you off, but where can people go see the movie? How can they get tickets? That kind of information.
Right. The movie's playing tonight at the Regent Theater in Arlington. If you want to grab tickets before you get to the theater, making sure you have a seat. Suitcasemovie.com has a link to the Regent Theater processing. I do know a lot of people are planning, most people have told us that the plan is to just go to the theater and pick up the tickets there because it was easier last time. So, and then that certainly should be fine. Everybody that can make it, I really appreciate it. It's a Wednesday night. The show starts at 8. It gets out at 9:30, so you'll be home in time for bed and get up for work the next day or what have you. So but they can go to suitcasemovie.com, and then if they can't make it tonight to see the movie again, they will be on demand on Netflix and Blockbuster in the early spring is what we're shooting for. We have three distribution options. We're really kind of weighing which one would be the best, but it will be at least with those avenues that on demand, like if you have Cox or Comcast or Verizon cable TV, as well as on DVD release or online download. You can rent it, download it, and watch it that way. That'll
That's
be in the
excellent.
Spring. Yeah.
Now, awesome. David, one of the things, yeah, it is, man, it really is. Now, one of the things, David, you mentioned I want to touch back on, you said that every year the talent and what's coming out, the bar keeps getting raised. And that is something that I've seen. I mean, the days of 15, 20 years ago where about the most that we would get would be some young college student with a small, you know, 8mm camera running around getting stuff and or trying to splice it together and make it look like something. Those days are gone. I mean, with the technology advances that we have and just with the caliber of talent that we have, because in reality, most listeners don't understand. You can have the most expensive equipment in the world, but if you don't know what to do with it, you're still going to look like you're running around with a little camera in the backyard with your brothers.
That's right.
Yeah, and that was another testament with David, on a funny note, that was another thing that my husband said to me, because like I said, he's fairly new to me dragging him to all these events. He asked me, who is this guy? Because I mentioned you. And I said, you know, he's a local director, and I even showed him, you had a nice article in the Lowell Sun that I showed him. So he's like, okay. So now he's seeing the trailer, and after he said to me, oh, I have to see this, he said to me later, he's like, but that looked like a real movie.
Like a what?
He said to me, it looked like a real movie.
Yeah, okay.
And I said to him, it is a real movie. He's like, no, you don't understand. He's like, I mean, it looked like it came out of Hollywood, budget. That's the feel, and it just blew his mind when I'm explaining to him who you are, how you did this, and he's like, but it looks like a real movie. So that was actually a compliment because it blew him about the quality.
Shoot, that's a huge compliment. I spent a lot of money on equipment, but I really only spent about a couple grand when it comes down to what I spent making the movie itself.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about paying actors and feeding them and all that stuff. So that was the goal, was to blur. Why do you need millions and millions and millions? Well, first of all, it does cost that much when you use union crew, and that's why unions were created, was because there's a lot of jobs out there for when you make a movie. You need an army to make a movie. But with a low budget, you can get creative. You can figure out ways to do things that, you know, the big budget productions can't do, because I mean they are required to use you know huge sun lamps and lights and what have you. So you know, I appreciate that. That's what we were going for. It was to make, you know, this is a Hollywood movie. Just, you know, we spent very little on it, like kind of like the Paranormal Activity, whatever that movie is that's out right now.
Right.
They spent 15 grand, you know, and they made this movie. So it's definitely possible. And, you know,
and it's funny too, David, because a lot of people argue, like you said, with the equipment and stuff and the lighting and it. But I mean, the richness of the film when you're seeing it, the trailer. I mean, the color, the graininess to it, everything is just. It is. It's like it's professional to me. If I didn't know you and I went to see this, I wouldn't really know the difference, except when people I knew started popping up. I'm going, oh, I know this one, I know that one.
Sure.
And that's another thing, because my husband, again, and this is just going off the trailer, which again people would say, but it's such. No, you can tell if a movie's good. I don't care how much Hollywood, you know, hypes it up with little. Because you know when a movie's not that good, because they show a second of the actor and then the big movie, you know, the big music and the explosion. That's all they have.
Yeah.
With this one, you're showing dialogue. You're showing parts of it where people are just talking, quote unquote. And when you're grabbing someone's attention and they say, I want to see this movie. And not only that, the caliber of the acting.
Yeah.
Again, my husband's like, and these are local actors. Yes. He didn't bring them from Hollywood. No. They live here. Yes, they do. It's like, he's like, this is amazing. And again, he has seen a lot of these. He has made compliments on some, but not to the extent that all the way back, and it's not to take away from the movie we were actually seeing, all the way back on a 45-minute commute, he's just talking about the suitcase. And asking me questions about it and stuff.
It's funny you're talking about the trailer making it. It's funny. Why I Hate the Last Day of School was a horrible fiasco. I mean, I had to ADR almost the whole movie. And I made a really great trailer for it. I was surprised that the trailer made the movie look good. It's a 15-minute movie. And it actually looks like it would be a good movie, but I know how horrible it is. And the thing with the suitcase is that we actually went back to our one-minute teaser because when we released that, and both the extended trailer and the original trailer, I can honestly say the movie is even better than the trailer, which is a nice feeling and warm fuzzy inside me know that the movie's actually even better than the trailer. When we put that on YouTube, I think within about 2 weeks we had a good 9 to 15, somewhere in there, 1,000 hits on both of the versions of it, and everyone's saying from all over the world,
awesome.
When is this? And they're laughing too. Some of them, you got a suitcase that pops open with smoke, and it looks like The Evil Dead, you know, if you watch the Evil Dead trailer.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a hokey. How serious can a movie about an evil suitcase be? But, I mean, it still has its premise and its story. So everybody's like, wow, this is like, that's really good. I mean, like, who are you? How did you do that? A lot of people ask me, how did I do that? So, I mean, I'm just honored that I could actually kind of trick people. That was the whole idea. Can we trick people into, you know, somebody told me that they think Johnny Depp isn't a good actor. He gets to the set, he just acts like an actor, you know.
Right.
And the same thing here. I'm acting like a filmmaker, and I'm, you know, I'm emulating what people expect from that. So, and I've learned quite a bit, but it's not to say that what I did, you know, anybody can do if they're really inspired. I watch movies. Watch movies and how they're filmed. Watch why did they frame it that way? Why did they choose this? Would you have done something different? And then listen to the commentary, because a lot of times directors and the actors that were in the film talk about their problems and their lens choices and their lighting and their locations and all the stuff that goes along with it. And you can always just keep learning that stuff, and you will get better. I guarantee it. So one big mistake amateur filmmakers make is they center their subject a lot of times. Then it's like there's a rule of thirds. There's a tic-tac-toe board on the screen, and you want to put the subject matter, your composition of your shot. That's what makes a movie look real a lot of times, is just where your subjects are in the frame and the sound. I mean, the sound and the composition, you know, then, you know, there's all the elements as far as, like, acting and writing and everything. But when you want to make a movie look good, those are important key points. So I'm glad I just threw them out there on this show. So, you know, people can maybe go back and, what's the rule of thirds? What is that? Mm-hmm. I've talked to some pretty successful filmmakers who have been making them for years and had never heard of it. So, and, you know, that's critical when it comes to when your final product is looked at by, you know, distributors. So...
Not only that, the other thing, you mentioned the sound, and that was the other thing with the trailer. That sound, you having it, and then the voiceover guy, you're like, okay, this is not going to be good. Not going by myself, making sure I have someone that I can squeeze the bejeebies out of them if I need to. And this is a grown woman that's not afraid to walk in the dark. Yeah, Mountain Man's laughing at me because he knows me. I will walk in the dark through the woods. I will, you know, escort people back and forth, not a problem. But there was just something of, again, because I knew the scare factor of trusting people, just no
now,
problem.
I
and
a
then
friend of mine, I just want to plug this. The guy that I found, the voiceover guy, he's a nice guy. He had a car accident. He's like kind of down his luck a little bit. He's a musician. I was going into a clinic with a friend of mine in the lobby there, and he's just the door guy at the desk there, and he was doing the voiceover voice just for a friend, and I had by coincidence been casting, trying to find a voiceover, and I was like, wait a minute, could you do that again? And I said, his name's Joey Jaffa Carrere, and like, you can Google him or search for him, and if you need a voiceover guy, this guy, he has all the sound equipment, he has the right stuff to record his voice. He's incredible. When it comes to, some people thought it was hokey, but it's supposed to be what we did. He definitely can, he'll do what
even,
you want. He's
yeah,
like
but
the,
hokey in a creepy way. I mean, that because like you said, that's what you wanted, but it's really not. It's kind of like tapping the old genres back in the 50s where you had these horror movies with the, you know, Vincent Price's and the Christopher Reeves and that big voice introducing you to
that's
the track.
Right.
We're going to scare you for the next hour and a half.
Right.
I mean, it's perfect. It's just, and it's an attention getter.
When it came to the sound, one of the biggest things you'll notice if you go to local premieres generally is the sound. If there's anything that's a dead giveaway that this is an independent movie, it's that, I can hear a car in this shot, and then we go to the over, and it's the mixing is bad. So I've spent, like I said, a good – when I added up the years, like – film days, I maybe spent two months of actual film days, 60 days to make the feature. Mm-hmm. But in months of editing and sound mixing, I mean, every last, if there's a leaf blowing in the shot, I mean, we mastered that smallest little detail so that it absolutely, you know, you hear what you're supposed to hear, you don't hear what you're not supposed to hear. And if there's anything that sells a movie correctly, I think it's the audio. And a lot of people miss that, the importance of it. Because if you're going to give something, if you're aspiring to be in Sundance, let's say, they'll hear the smallest pop or click. I mean, they know, okay, first of all, they know that you're independent, but they also know that you really needed to do your work. That's what they're looking for. They have judges for every category, and the sound is unforgivable. So
it is unforgivable, you know, because you're right. I know, real quick, guest 1937, welcome to the room. Nice to have you there. The other thing when you're talking about the sound, and that's very true, because I actually, a year ago, I went to a movie that was independent. Mm-hmm. It was a great movie, but there was this annoying in the background, and it was taking, I couldn't focus on the movie because the sound was so annoying. It was especially more obvious during the parts where there was that no music, because there was very important dialogue and those poignant pauses that are meant for effect.
Right.
That was lost because of that.
You're talking about when a regular person watches a film, it's a thing that happens. Everybody loves movies because they can suspend their disbelief and they can get into the story. They're not worrying about, is it acted good? They're not thinking about, you know, how is this made? They're into the story. And it really is just like a person reading their kid, a mother reading their child a story before they go to bed. The kid's imagination is alive and then putting in all the blanks. And you're not thinking about what the stories are, just hearing and watching. So, yeah, that's why it's so critical. And
you're right, because the analogy that you said about a child having a story read to him, when that child is getting that story read, they don't want to hear their bigger brother's music. They don't want to hear someone, you know, lawnmower. That upsets
them. Yeah, they don't
need
distractions.
Exactly.
Right.
And with your production, again, even in the trailer, you have parts where you have that dialogue part where there's nothing else, just that dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crisp, and you're in the moment, and like the particular part where you're in the, I think it's in the kitchen or in the bedroom when you're getting ready to go and
when
having a dialogue with you.
When she's in the suitcase, is that what you're talking about?
Yes. And I'm like, number one, I'm going to kill him, but never mind that. But it's just the fact that there was no distraction. You were right there with them, almost to the point that you're looking at her going, what are you going to say to him? What are you going to do? You know, because he just did this.
It's funny that you bring that up, because this is interesting, kind of a little backstory on that particular. We wrote that scene. It was a very important scene in the movie when she's confronting the salesman about where he's been and stuff. And we didn't have a stocking. I ran out while we were in the middle of filming and got a stocking for that, because I envisioned the trailer. I said, you know, what's going to sell? It's a movie about a suitcase. What better selling point would there be for it other than, you know, the infidelity, which all can be read with the wife finding an extra, you know, some undergarment in there, and he, you know, and it makes people laugh every time they see it, because it's like everybody knows you're on board immediately when you see it.
Oh yeah.
Now, what's this? You know. So and
you know what I like about it, David? It's funny. And maybe I'm the type that I want the people that are watching the movie to use their imagination, because I think that the actual product with the imagination are just an unstoppable combination. And a lot of filmmakers forget that. They just want to show us everything. And that takes away from it, because sometimes what I'm imagining is a lot worse than what you're showing me.
Right.
But the subtlety of that stalking, immediately we know what's going on, because it's a very intimate apparel, but it's not sleazy, it's not over the top. It's just
subtle. Yeah.
That everybody, even younger people, are like, whoa. It doesn't have to be, you know, the bra or the underwear. It's just that subtle thing that I laughed, because even younger people that are in their 20s that probably have never physically seen a stocking are like, oh, what has he been doing, you know, kind of thing, and the reaction.
But you also know that Susan is so great with that. I mean, she just ate that up. When I told her what we were going to do, you know, she was so she's very good. When she gets into character, I mean, we pulled a little bit of a Southern accent with our characters, and we were stretching to kind of, like, challenge ourselves, and she just pulled that off so beautifully. And there's always people critiquing her particular footage that we chose because it's such an important, you know, that really is what lets people know. But there's no question that, you know, what's going on in her mind, and then the schmo salesman guy trying to cover it up. So, I mean, it makes you really wonder what's going to happen. What is going to happen in this scene? What's going to happen next? Is there, you know, he's a killer, you know, and does the wife know, and things like that. So, you know, and this is just the backstory, never mind the actual movie.
The actual movie.
Right. I do want to add that, like, we covered, again, it was low budget with very minimal money. I mean, we're talking, you know, like I said, maybe $2,000-$3,000 that I spent to make these segments. So I covered, when you see the film tonight, which everybody that's listening, I hope they'll go tonight, the scenarios are included. A lot of critiques that when they went to the premiere asked for more, even more. They still want more. Now, the movie itself lasts an hour and 10 minutes. It doesn't bore you. I didn't want to – as far as writing goes, I'm like, here's the scene. This is why you're watching it, okay? And it's just, I'm not going to kick a dead horse. Let's get into the scene. Let's see what we're watching and then what happens next. So you see these scenarios, and if anything, people think about the movie the next day, and then they're like, wow, I was like yeah, I can see why he, you know, maybe he cut that short, maybe, you know, because it wasn't, it's just what happened, and then this is what happens next. So we have a lot of, like, the Twilight Zone-y stuff that people really enjoyed. They were like, wow, I didn't even know how you did that type of stuff. And did you see stuff like that in the extended trailer? I'm trying to think. I don't think we have the extended trailer out right now, so people are going to have to go to the movie.
See, I know, definitely. And David, see, that's what I like. I feel that that's a genre or a style of filmmaking that is just so severely underused nowadays. And that's why Rod Serling was so effective, because he would just creep you out enough that the rest you would think about for the rest of the night of the what if.
Yeah.
The additional stuff. And that's the thing with this movie. And I know it's a testament. And you mentioned Susan. That was another thing with Susan, when you see her in the trailer. And again, this is just a trailer. She is having that little bit of an accent. And you put her in a situation where, again, it could have been done very cheesy because she could have been over the top.
Right.
Yet the accent is so subtle that when you're listening to her, you don't even acknowledge that it's quote-unquote an accent. It's just her.
Right. Yeah.
But there's no deviation in it.
If anybody out there listening ever wanted to be an actor, and I, like I said, I came from a family of actors. I was raised in classes. My father was always teaching classes as well as doing, you know, soaps and commercials and movies. It was one day he said one thing. It's like, cross the stage and pick up a book and read it, was the assignment. And the point of the lesson was that when you pick up the book, even though you're on stage and stage acting, you have to indicate quite a bit. Don't pretend to read it. Read the book. I mean, whatever it is, look for a page, literally look for it. I do that in the movie too, in one of the scenes. If there's anything that I care about on a movie set, on one of my sets, unless it's an over-the-top character, is don't act. If you're acting, you're a bad actor. If you cannot act, then you have it. Then you have what you were going for. So that's the secret. You just learned, you know, 10 years of acting classes. Still helps to take acting classes, but if you can remember not to act, then you're doing the job correctly. And that's why it's so amazing.
Yeah, and that's the important thing that people don't realize, and that's what makes a great actor different from a good actor from a horrible actor, is the acting aspect of it that you're talking about. Because, again, going back to Susan, and I can understand why people have commented on her acting skills, because of the fact that, again, she's going from a very subtle thing to the point that she's confronting you thinking that you're cheating on her. That's a time where, as an actor, you could really lose your accent. It could go all over the place. I've seen it a lot of times, people trying to do the New England accent, where once they're upset and stuff, all of a sudden it just turns horrible. So in reality, for her to maintain that composure and still make it seem so believable, well, like I said, I'm looking at it like I'm in the room and I'm her friend, and I'm looking at her like, do you want me to hurt him? What do you want me to do? Because she's so believable.
Yeah.
And like I said, this is just a trailer, never mind that. And that's why people don't understand the caliber of talent that we have in this area.
Right.
And they just underestimate it. They're looking at me like, I cannot believe that these people are local. And I'm like, why are you so surprised?
That was the point of me making this film, actually, was that was one of the main drives for me, was that, you know, when the big productions come here, they're more apt to, you know, cast, I don't want to miscondone a film, but they'll cast out of L.A. or New York even for the smallest thing. We're talking a car rental person saying, here's your keys, and anybody can say that. Anybody can, you know, cast them that looks like that person. More roles are being given here, smaller roles, which is a good thing. But I want the more independent film that's made here with good acting will kind of alleviate the fear. It really, when you have a demo reel, if you're an actor or you're trying to get an agent or trying to get a part, it's about alleviating the fear of the production, because they just want to know you're going to get to the set, you're going to do your role, it's going to look good when editing, and they're going to have their product when they're done. That's all they care about. So as long as they see there's more and more actors and independent film that's being cast here, like, whoa, okay, wait a minute, there are actors there, you know, there are people that are on their game, they know what they're doing. You know, auditioning is one thing, and everybody gets, you know, the adrenaline rush and blows auditions, because we're not in New York, we don't do them, you know, 10 back-to-back auditions during the week. But when we're in front of the camera, we know the job and we do our homework, then they'll be, you know, okay, we can give this person the bartender role, or we can give them, you know, these other bit parts that will help get those people represented and get them a leg up. And that's, if any of us make it, you know, get a role, I'm happy. One of the gals we talked to on one of the films we worked on, she just finished The Fighter, and she got to play Mark Wahlberg's sister. And now she's a non-union actress at the time, but it's just that kind of thing. To get a major role in a major motion picture, to be cast out of Boston, that's what we need. We need to keep having that happen as the industry continues to flow here. And with the longevity of films coming here, as long as there's, like, it continues, then we'll have that raise. So that's why it was important to me to have that acting shown. Like, this was all shot around New England, all New Hampshire, Rhode Island, and Boston. All that stuff was cast here. We shot it here. You know, the acting and everything was done here. So that should, you know, hopefully, you know, when this movie gets seen by distributors, other people watch it. So, you know, the big guys, it gets to them. So that's what we're going for.
And the other thing, David, is the originality of it, because, I mean, I've done a few myself. Anytime someone thinks horror movies, it's either, okay, we're going to do a vampire movie, or we're going to do a zombie movie. I actually was in a trailer a couple months ago where it was a zombie movie, but it was different. I mean, they actually took it in a different direction. That's the only reason
I
did
that
it.
One, actually. That's also good. And when you're creative, I mean, those are fun.
Yes.
And they are overdone, but there's always a market for them. So if you have a good edge on them, that's what you should do.
But when they start getting to be the same thing over and over again, and then it's so refreshing to see someone like yourself come up with a total different concept. And it's funny, because you mentioned earlier, to go back, they're like, oh, it's a suitcase. What's so creepy about a suitcase? Can't be any creepier than a mechanical monkey, or, you know, a car, or a mirror, or a painting. It's all about the imagination and you actually putting it all together to make it creepy. And that's what it's about. And obviously, that's what people forget. It's a horror movie that's taking you to the Twilight Zone kind of thing.
Is what inspired me. It was like Hitchcock for the backstory, but also, and this is just a coincidence, because I like the Twilight Zone stuff, you know, Rod Serling stuff, and then Spielberg was a huge influence on me in general, just from the way. Somebody said to me that Spielberg doesn't know how to make movies, which I'm like, what? And so he just knows how to tell good stories. And I don't know why they said that. I don't really think that's true. But when you look at his work, he's really good at telling a story, and especially with Poltergeist. And so when you watch this movie, there's definitely a homage to Poltergeist. There's Spielberg-esque type things in it as well. And the reason I'm pointing out the coincidence is that Spielberg's first job was with Twilight Zone episode or something like that. It was Columbo and Twilight Zone and Rod Serling. Rod Serling actually was with one of the first things he ever did, and that's why he was inspired. And that's like, oh, okay, then maybe that's why I was inspired by both of them in that fashion. Because he took it to the cinematic level, whereas Rod Serling was television. So that's, you know, we have all these different influences in the film. You have, you know, and then also you have Stephen King, you know, type that I always attribute the humor to Stephen King, because you could watch the read rather the most gruesome part of his book and still be laughing because of the way he wrote it, even though it's horror. So you know, he gets you into that dark humor, you know.
Yes, it does. The thing with you, though, it's like it's great because it's a kind of like a testament to the talent and when it all comes together. And that's one of the things that I love, because you are highlighting a lot of different talents in our area. You got the filmmaking, the producing, the work ethic, the actors, even the voiceover and the sound and the editing, and just this big larger than life production that it's not supposed to be larger than life. But it is. But it is
such a
subtle way that it makes it like it would be natural, like something that could happen.
Right.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if you start kind of like that Jaws thing where no one wanted to go swimming. People are going to go home and throw away their old suitcases.
Well, that's something we want to plug too. If you're coming tonight, just bring your
old
suitcases for the Suitcases for Kids drive, because we're contributing those. You get a free popcorn if you bring a donation to either suitcase, a duffel bag, or a backpack for kids that are homeless or in foster care and don't have one. So and that was just a really nice tie-in that they came to us. It happens to be called Suitcases for Kids. So, you know, we're helping that. And also, in addition to what you said about highlighting, I want to commend the cast. I mean, we have a great actress, a side actress like Lori Vizzella, who had a very small part in the movie, but she just, you know, everybody that was in this is a part of history, because it will be around forever. And,
absolutely.
And, you know, and she did a brilliant job. And like I said, I try to remember everybody that was in the cast, but, you know, when you see it, you'll see it. It's just a handful of people, but like Rod Weber, Irina Pellegrad, Mike Batch. These guys are, you know, they're incredible talent. They all came from Boston and Rhode Island, and it's definitely, you know, a part of history, and I'm proud to be able to be one of the people that, you know, I came up with this idea, and it's just amazing the amount of buzz that happened with it. It was really unexpected, and that's just like, you're like, I had a good idea,
and
I got to come up with a new one, and I do have a new one.
I'm telling you, you better. I'll tell you, David, nothing, I'm going to go out on a limb here. I really do see this movie becoming a cult classic, one of these movies that people are going to keep going back to.
I hope that, like, when I make the commercial projects and when I sell out, as they say, people will still be able to go back and say, well, oh, I can see why, you know, he went somewhere, the influence behind what he made and the struggle he went through to make this movie, even though it's like Evil Dead is a horrible, horrible movie, but I like it better than – I tried to watch Halloween the other day. And it was like, and that's a John Carpenter directed it. And it's like, if you try to watch that movie, it's pretty bad. I mean, but we still love it. So, I mean, why? Because it's just, you know, it's legendary. So thank you for
it. It is legendary.
I'm telling you,
it is. It's like the perfect storm. I really do. I mean, it's just something about it to the point that I do see this movie actually being dissected in classrooms later on because of the fact of how you did it, what you put into it. I mean, it's just because I've been around it so much, and now with, like I said, my son's in film, and I've been helping him a lot, just the things he's taught me, you sit there and you go, in a minute, you have me sold, where I'm seeing this, there's no way I'm not going to see it, and the fact that I do, going out on the limb, I'm telling you, I really do believe this is going to be a great movie for you, and I think it's going to open a lot of doors, definitely a lot of doors.
Well, thank you.
Well, to our listeners, wow, the time just flew by. David is so amazing. David, we're going to have you back so you can tell us what other evil doings you're up to in the future in filmmaking.
Absolutely.
Mountain Man is in the building. He was actually real excited about the fact that you were doing the Suitcase for Kids. Mountain Man talked earlier in another show that he was actually in the foster care system, and he knows how important it is for a child to have their own little suitcase that gives them a piece of something that they belong and that belongs to them, and it just gives them a little bit of dignity when they get moved. So for our listeners, if you're coming out, new suitcase, duffel bag, gently used, anything, free popcorn. David, again, where's the movie being premiered tonight?
It's the Regent Theater in Arlington, Mass. 7 Medford Street in Arlington, Massachusetts. It starts at 8 o'clock. I'd get there early to make sure you get a seat.
Awesome. All right. Thank you to our listeners. Thank you to David. I got the lady telling me we got 60 seconds.
Okay.
Thank you all for joining us. I will see you later tonight, David. Mountain Man,
thank you
for stopping by. Thank you so much. And I will see you all later. And remember, do not let anyone ever take your dreams away. Have a good one, guys.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Anxiety.
sets in, I'm starting to pace. My nerves unsettled, sweat drips my face. Hands take, can't escape this decision I make. Heart racing, my faith says this is my fate. I just brace and I take in the face of adversity. Tasting this certainty, the brakes ain't hurting me. Gain on, a bomb my pain stronger. Fame smarter, street smarter, train harder. Can't stop me, drop me, I'm not losing. I'm too fast, lightning even when I'm not moving. All heart, leave these cowards on cold. I'm hot, not to mention all the power I hold. Keep moving, keep training, headstrong, be patient. Meet them head to head, I don't care if it's the least safest. Not stopping, have a promise to prove. I'm a fighter, it's not an option to lose.